and they're basically turning rock into sand, and they're undermining the bedrock of the nation, literally undermining the bedrock of the nation. And that's going to cause all kinds of earthquakes, which are happening in Oklahoma. Over 1,000 earthquakes a year are now happening in Oklahoma because of fracking. And so that's the kind of damage that can be done. And energy is the biggest contribution to CO2 in equivalents across the world. About 65%, roughly, of the CO2 equivalents, including all gases, is caused from our energy use in the world.
Hello, and welcome back to the Outdoor Minimalist Podcast. I'm your host, Meg Carney, and I'm an outdoor and environmental writer and author of the book, Outdoor Minimalist, Wasteless Hiking, Camping, and Backpacking. The Outdoor Minimalist Podcast has the goal to give listeners actionable ways to waste less hiking, camping, backpacking, and more during every step of their process. Your impact outdoors starts long before you hit the trail and goes beyond leave no trace ethics. You'll learn how to identify sustainable outdoor brands, how to ask hard questions regarding sustainability, and begin to shift and evolve your mindset to integrate minimalism into all of your outdoor pursuits. In episode 124 of the Outdoor Minimalist Podcast, we explore what it means to be an activist and environmental advocate and how to build a community around conservation. To me, being an activist and environmentalist is simply a part of my life. They're not necessarily a hobby or a second thought because I have always had a strong sense of justice, no matter my age or where I've lived or the community present in my life. But as I've gotten older, I've realized that having a community makes a huge difference, not only in my mental health, but also in my ability to create meaningful and impactful change. To help explore how you, no matter your location, can begin to take the reins and tackle some of your area's environmental issues, I had the pleasure of chatting with two gentlemen who, like me, have embodied a life of activism in their community. Mitch Stevens and Russell Lowes have been enjoying the wild lands of America for decades, going back to their elementary school years. Mitch has been the outings chair for the Sierra Club Southern Arizona group since the early 2000s. He's led outings throughout the Southwest and the Sierra Nevada mountains of California. Mitch also founded Southwest Discoveries, an ecotourism company based in Tucson, Arizona. Russell was involved with about 40 kids from two high schools in Arizona to help set up the first pro-wilderness group in the state, and he's been promoting Wilderness Acts ever since then. So thank you for joining me on the Outdoor Minimalist Podcast, Mitch and Russell. I'm excited for you guys to be here, and hopefully this interview is impactful and encouraging more people to become activists in their community. Before we get like right into the topics of conservation and things like that, I want to ask you both, since there's two of you, first to introduce yourself so we can identify the voices, and also to answer how you got involved and interested in outdoor recreation and how it fits into your life now.
Well, I could jump in first. I got interested in the outdoors when I was about 11 years old. My parents sent my brother and I to a summer camp. I'm from New York City, but they sent us to a summer camp in Pennsylvania, and I learned all about the wilderness and camping and hiking and backpacking, and it lasted my whole life. Back in 2006, I joined the Sierra Club and started going on their hikes, the local Sierra Club. Before long, the leaders of the Sierra Club recommended that I start leading outings, which I did. So I started doing that about a year later, and I led people on outings all over Arizona and Tucson. And that's how I met my friend Russell here, because he went on a few of my more difficult hikes. And then they recommended that I become the outings chairman. So I've been the outings chairman since then. And now I lead national Sierra Club outings, water trips throughout the West. I formed and founded a company called Southwest Discoveries, which is an eco-tour company. And we espouse many of the same ethics that the Sierra Club does, which is if you bring people into the wilderness and they fall in love with it, they'd want to help protect it. And that was the original vision by John Muir, who founded the Sierra Club back in the 1800s.
And this is Russell. My background is in power plant economics. But originally, before all that, in high school, I started working for a new organization that 40 of us kids put together from two different high schools in Central Arizona. And the schools were Coronado and Saguaro High. And we set up the first environmental pro-wilderness group in Arizona. And it was called the Arizona Wilderness Study Committee, which later became the Arizona Wilderness Coalition. And people in our group went on to establish a bill with Barry Goldwater and Mo Udall. And the bill passed in 1984, establishing a total of 90 wilderness areas in Arizona, the most of any state in the country, not acreage, but in total number of wilderness areas. And so that was my background. And then we started doing hikes when I was like 7 years old, and did a serious hike. And when I was 10 years old, 25 miles in one day backpacking. And I did all kinds of, you know, hikes since then, up to 10 weeks in length, a bunch of small trips too. And hiking every week, is at least once a week, is in my pattern, so to say.
That's awesome. You guys have a pretty diverse background, and it's great that you guys were able to make that connection with your love of the outdoors. What made you interested then in working in conservation arenas? Was it because you enjoyed those spaces, or was there a specific motivator?
It's because we enjoy the spaces, and we want to help protect the spaces. Going back again to John Muir and the Sierra Club, if you bring people into the wilderness and then they fall in love with it, they want to help protect it. So that's always been my theory, and it's the reason why I wanted to be in conservation, the reason that I'm with the Sierra Club, and then Southwest Discoveries.
And earlier on, I felt like, well, wilderness would be threatened by energy exploitation. And so I moved from wilderness advocacy, which I still stay with, but more into energy advocacy. And so we fought nuclear and fossil fuels, which are basically stripping a lot of the wilderness, potential wilderness areas. In some cases, they're wanting to go into wilderness areas and strip those areas. And then going into energy, promoting solar, promoting wind, promoting energy efficiency, which is the number one solution, and promoting energy management also, and energy storage is what I've moved into more. But the whole time we've been promoting wilderness also.
Yeah. And so why do you think that conservation should be a focus for more people and more individuals? Why should we be talking about it? And why should we be involved in it in terms of environmental protection?
Well, the big glaring problem that the Earth is facing right now is global warming or climate change. And if we continue to let that happen, we're going to create a planet that's going to be uninhabitable. We've already started seeing some of the effects of climate change, severe heat waves in the summer to flooding, more hurricanes, tornadoes. The list just goes on and on.
There's a prediction of a 50% decline in the number of species on the planet by 2100. And that's probably understating it, because, you know, in the scientific approach, you only posit what you can prove, essentially, you know, in reasonable proof. And they're not seeing a lot of the proof that will be coming down the road. So hopefully we can get a handle on this, reverse that. The 30 by 2030 approach, or 30 by 30 approach that the Biden administration is endorsing, that's to take 30% of our land, put it into non-economic use, essentially, but into natural use by 2030, is an incredibly honorable program that I'm hoping we can attain, you know, by 2030 with a reasonable future set of administration.
Yeah, that's a good plan.
Yeah, that's a great program. And if people want to learn more about the 30 by 30 initiative, we do have an episode outlining that entire program. Great. So you can go back and listen to that, and I'll make sure that I link it below so you can get like a full outline of what that actually entails and like the goals of all of that.
Great.
And so I guess my next question might be more specific to Russell, but Mitch, feel free to jump in. And it would be like, how does energy fit into conservation efforts, and how has your work influenced conservation in the area you live?
So give an example with nuclear energy, which is now being called clean energy since the Trump administration. They actually officially designated a very unclean energy as clean energy, you know, as along with trying to distort all kinds of other definitions. But what ends up happening with nuclear energy is you have to mine uranium. And uranium is a tiny percentage of the total, like you get a tiny percentage of the ore out as uranium. It's to the point when I first started, it was 3,000 pounds of uranium that you would get out of 1 million pounds of ore. And now it's 1,000 pounds of uranium out of 1 million pounds of ore. And it's supposed to go down to 440 with the next major assay level, they call it, you know, the content level. That means you have to mine a huge amount to get a little bit of energy. And so it's becoming more and more extreme extraction is what many people are calling it. The natural gas industry is involved in extreme extraction. They're doing fracking. They're essentially putting down a drill bit. And then they're at the end of that drill bit is another drill bit that can go sideways. It can go, you know, literally one shaft down and then an adit approach. So a shaft is going down and adit is horizontal. And they're basically turning rock into sand, and they're undermining the bedrock of the nation, literally undermining the bedrock of the nation. And that's going to cause all kinds of earthquakes, which are happening in Oklahoma. Over 1,000 earthquakes a year are now happening in Oklahoma because of fracking. And so that's the kind of damage that can be done. And energy is the biggest contribution to CO2 in equivalents across the world. About 65% roughly of the CO2 equivalents, including all gases, is caused from our energy use in the world.
Yeah, those are some staggering numbers, I guess, and statistics. So how has your work with energy then kind of like influenced conservation in your region?
Right now, I'm spending a good deal of time trying to get community choice energy. Are you familiar with that at all? Some people think it's community solar. That's a different thing. Community choice energy is really tightly defined, and it's where a city can come in and take over the energy production from a utility. And they're doing it in 6 states right now. 10 states are authorized, and we're trying to get Arizona to be authorized. Arizona is one of the most geologically diverse states in the country, probably the most. And so we're trying to get community choice energy in, so that it can basically take away the slow conversion that utilities are making to solar and energy efficiency and wind and storage, and speed that up. In like 9 years, CCE can become 100% renewable. It's taking 50 years for the utilities to do that.
Wow, that is really interesting. I haven't heard of that before.
Yeah, it's a big organization that promotes it. It's called Lean Energy. That's the association of all the different community choice energy or community choice aggregation movements.
And that's like a nationwide program, not specific to Arizona?
Well, they do nationwide, but you have to go state by state at this point. And we're also pushing to get the federal authorization so we don't have to go state by state anymore, because any state should be able to do this.
Yeah, that, I guess that would make it a little easier.
Yeah.
Adventuring plans on your calendar? Remember to grab your Lava Linens travel towel on your way out the door. Founded by a mother-daughter team, Lava Linens crafts durable, luxurious travel towels as a more sustainable and better performing alternative to microfiber and cotton towels. Powered by flax, hemp, and tencel, they're designed to be by your side for years to come. Use the code OUTDOORMINIMALIST for 15% off your next order. Yeah, something that's interesting about conservation is how it can be kind of like integrated into all aspects of society. So even if you're not someone that necessarily is like you, Russell, working directly in that field, you can have an influence and be a part of that community. So I guess we'll turn over to Mitch for a second, and I'd love to hear some ways that conservation has been integrated into your business.
Well, by the business Southwest Discovery is what we do. And by educating people that go on the tours about how important conservation is, and turning them on to organizations like the Sierra Club and Greenpeace and other really good organizations like that. but also personally, the choices that we make in driving less or driving more gas conscious vehicles and not being so hard on the planet in our everyday choices that we make.
Yeah. And with your integration with the Sierra Club, why do you think that that's an organization that you recognize or recommend? I mean, recommend so widely. And why did you want to become involved with them?
For example, Sandy Barr, who's the Grand Canyon chapter head, the Grand Canyon chapter covers all of Arizona. He's been incredible with, promoting energy efficiency, opposing coal mining. The Sierra Club at large has been partly or wholly responsible for canceling over 100 coal plants in the United States. And, with its lawsuits and with its interventions and in all kinds of rulemaking efforts and utility company interventions and agency interventions, two different kinds of interventions. And they've gotten a lot of the plants that were planned to be built taken off the boards. And now we're, in fact, this year, we're building more solar capacity globally and in the United States than all other energy sources combined. Solar is over 50% of all of the capacity at additions nationwide and globally. It's really great.
And Sierra Club's helping make that happen. And to my knowledge, the Sierra Club is, Russell, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're the oldest environmental organization in the country?
I think in the world.
In the world?
I'm not sure, but they're from the late 1800s.
Certainly the largest,
Yeah, they're the largest. And they're also a democratically voted organization. So the board, the national board, which is kind of global, but it's called the national board, they're elected by all of their members. And no other big environmental organization is like that. None of them. They're all board elected board members, essentially.
And they've done stupendous things as far as conservation is concerned in general. Well, one of the things was stopping two destructive dams they wanted to build in the 1960s in the Grand Canyon. They've stopped a dam that would have flooded one of the most beautiful areas in northern Utah called Echo Park in Dinosaur National Monument, which was historic. And that's just a couple of the things that the Sierra Club has done. And they continue to be a dynamic force in the conservation field.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are some great examples. And when I'm looking at the Sierra Club, as far as like local chapters go, it's interesting how much the communities can become involved and individuals can be kind of like a part of the solution. And so when you guys are based in Tucson, Arizona, I believe. Mm-hmm. So if you are looking at like the local Sierra Club chapter, how can people get involved? And also, like, what are some of the conservation efforts that are happening around you?
Well, you can just search for Sierra Club, join the Sierra Club, and you'll get how to get involved. And when you join the Sierra Club, it's $39 a year. And they actually have subsidy programs for people that can't afford the $39. They're very, very easily. Then once you're a member of the national, you're also assigned to be a member of wherever your address is. So if you live in Arizona, it'd be the Arizona chapter, the Grand Canyon chapter, they call it. And then if you're in California, there are a bunch of chapters there, and you'd be automatically enrolled in that chapter.
Right. So most of the activity going on in Arizona is in the Phoenix area, correct me if I'm wrong, right? We used to have a greater presence in the Tucson area, but we got a little disorganized after COVID, and we're now just starting to build it back up again.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure COVID disrupted a lot. I mean, we know that it disrupted a lot of things, but especially for conservation efforts and like community meetings and continuing those practices was quite the disruption. And no matter where we are located as general citizens, I think sometimes it can be hard for us to get out and understand how to become a part of conservation efforts, especially if it's not built into our career.
Exactly.
So how do you think that more people can become involved in those types of organizations and programs?
By education, by knowing about certain things that are happening right now. Like, for example, Russell and I give these presentations at Canyon Ranch twice a month. Canyon Ranch is a famous resort spa centered in Tucson, Arizona, but there's spas all over the country. But there's this issue that has been going on for 15, 20 years in a place called Oak Flat. that not many people know about, but they want to build a massive copper mine and destroy a beautiful canyon with a riparian area to mine copper 6,000 feet below the surface of the earth.
And that's been that, by the way, in the LA Times and the Chicago Tribune and the New York Times and a number of other publications. But it was assigned by President Eisenhower as a place to be set aside for permanent use of the general
hiking public back in the '50s. Yeah.
Yeah, and also the ceremonial use of the Apache Indians. And that's what he assigned it for. And then they tried to go in 13 times to take it away from the public in the U.S. House, and they failed 13 times. And then the night before the 2015 National Defense Authorization Act, John McCain slipped it into the bill, and nobody knew it was there. Or if they did, they had to vote for the National Defense Authorization. And Obama was opposed to the project, but he had to sign that bill. And now we've been trying to take that out ever since. But they will get it if there's a final environmental impact statement. It automatically will transfer to that company. And it's a multinational company. And that's cheaper to mine where you already are mining. And it's environmentally more beneficial to mine where you're already mining and not to set up a new destructive mine.
So Russell and I talk about this during our presentations, and most of the people that attend our presentations are wealthy people from all over the country, all over the world. And we say to them, well, why would you want to know about an issue in Arizona when you live in, let's say, Washington State? Because we're all U.S. citizens, but we're citizens of the world. And we all need to take a part in or stand in what is happening.
There's so many things that you can do too. You can donate to these nonprofit groups. There are a ton of them, and there are some that are very effective, like the Sierra Club. Or you can go and be more specific about your area, like in Tucson, there's the Sky Island Alliance. Sky Island Alliance protects part of the corridor that runs from the Arctic in Alaska all the way down to Argentina. And you can get involved. You can actually go and take out species that aren't supposed to be there that are dominating the environment. Mm-hmm. You can do all kinds of things. You can do physical things. You can do mental things. All kinds of volunteerism is out there.
Yeah. And when we're speaking about, I guess, like volunteer opportunities regarding conservation, do you think that's where we kind of like bridge the gap between what conservation and activism is, or where does that fit in?
Conservation and activism are kind of synonymous to me. I mean,
if you need activism for conservation,
you can be a personal activist by cleaning up how you use energy, you know, just like buying an electric vehicle, driving fewer miles, regardless of what kind of vehicle you have, you know, cutting down on heating, insulating your home. All those are like personal activist things. And then there's community activist things, which are, you know, like getting together a new organization to promote wilderness areas or to oppose a coal plant or to oppose a chemical plant that has other alternatives that are more environmentally benign. There are all sorts of different things.
And if we are kind of like going in from a listener perspective, so no matter where they happen to be located, say they want to take action in conservation in their area or any form of activism, how can they kind of build a community that supports those ideals? Because I think sometimes people feel very alone in their pursuits and they don't think that they can make a difference in terms of like large scale conservation issues. So multi-question here. How did they like reframe that perspective and also work towards building a community that can support their efforts?
Well, we take people as I'm a volunteer for the Sierra Club, and we, as I mentioned earlier, we organize these water trips. So on these water trips, we get people from all over the country, let's say. And during our campfire talks, that's one of the questions, one of the things that we bring up. We sit around in a circle and we ask people, well, what are the issues in your state, in your area? And they talk about it. But the best way is to, once again, join the Sierra Club in that area or another organization like the Sierra Club and get involved and help spread the word and take action.
We'll start one up from scratch. If you see something that needs to be done in your area and nobody's doing it or it's not being done enough, go for it. You know, get something going, put a few hundred dollars into it, collect some money from friends, and put together a, you know, a 501c3, a nonprofit, if you want to take that route, or just do an association of people that doesn't have any official standing. There are a number of associations all over the country. Mm-hmm. A lot of the Nader groups started as associations early on in the 60s, Ralph Nader's groups, and then they became 501c3s later, official, you know, incorporated nonprofit organizations.
So there's no end to the things that people can do locally and nationally.
Get involved with community radio. There are about 50 community radio stations across the country. Unfortunately, some areas don't have them. Tucson's lucky to have KXAI Community Radio, for example. And there are community radio stations up in Washington, up in the coastal area a lot. And I don't know if you have any where you are in the middle of the state. But there are a lot of different things. You can also get involved in op-ed writing, opinion editorial writing, letters to the editor, meeting with your state and congressional representatives and senators, all sorts of things.
I was going to mention, too, talking about senators and how we vote is critical in what is going to happen in the world in the upcoming years. So we have to do our homework and vote for people that are going to help protect the planet.
But I'll say, don't just vote. Do your research and then vote.
Exactly.
Do the research first. Do their research and vote. Because you can't just treat it as like a simple thing. You have to really.
You can't assume that just because somebody is a particular political party that they're going to believe a certain way. You have to, as Russell says, look it up, do the research, and then vote.
Yeah, it's good to know who you're voting for and to vote in local elections as well, because they have quite a big influence. And I think sometimes they're overlooked, especially in bigger election years, like presidential elections and things like that. Local elections have a big influence and can trickle out into like the larger state policies and all those things.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
PFAS are known as forever chemicals because so many of them have been found to last essentially on geologic time. They don't break down naturally in the environment.
You have two main sources. From production, you have point sources. You have emissions from industrial chemical surfactants, like emulsifiers in fluoropolymer production. So quite big volumes. We're talking about thousands of tons every year into water currents. And since they don't fully degrade, they don't mineralize. They're only the background level, we call them, is increasing slowly over time. And eventually, this water becomes drinking water sooner or later. And there we are.
What we find is that in the food chain, these molecules that go into organisms and lodge into the fat or oils in their cells or in their tissues and stay there because they aggregate. These longer chain ones tend to stay in the fat and not want to get in the urine and be excreted from the bodies. And so what you find is up the food chain, they accumulate, they bioaccumulate. They've even seen whales and polar bears with PFAS in their bodies as a result of this bioaccumulation and the fact that they're very resistant to degradation.
Well, what I can say as a physician is that these chemicals can enter the body and that some of them can stay there for many, many years. You will, over time, accumulating more and more in your body if the exposure continues, and therefore we're concerned about the long-term adverse health effects.
So we need action to not only clean up and mitigate our exposure to PFAS that are out there in the environment, but we need to cut it off at the tap. We need to cut it off at the source. And that's why we need leadership from government leaders. And that's why we also need leadership from the business community to take action on this urgent environmental and public health crisis that is impacting people all across the United States and all across the world.
Join us on March 4th, 2024, in the 10-part podcast series, Forever Chemicals, as we explore the rise, scientific cover-ups, pollution, and now regulations of the class of chemicals known as PFAS. Forever Chemicals is an independent podcast series produced by Blackfooted Ferret Productions. As an independent podcast, our goal is to provide free and accessible, unbiased information for all. If you'd like to support our mission, head to our show notes and donate to our GoFundMe. A lot of great insights, a lot of good advice, information in terms of like different ways that we could be involved in community actions and conservation programs. One of the main focuses, I guess, that you guys have brought up continuously is the Sierra Club. So how can listeners learn more and work with the Sierra Club in their area?
You can join it, and that'll give you the national magazine each quarter. And then you will also get usually it's a quarterly publication from the chapter that you'll be a member of at the same time. And then they will list meetings, and they often list where they're doing, say, invasive weed removal programs or trail building, or they'll just have some enjoyable hikes that you can go on. There are all sorts of ways in which you can become like a executive committee member. That's essentially a board member in the Sierra Club. They call it an executive committee member. And so you're basically a board member for a local chapter or for a group that is a sub-chapter group. Or you can just get involved with, there are so many different things that they'll have public meetings on and Zoom meetings also.
As Russell mentioned, going on their outings is an excellent way to find out about, you know, you're with like-minded people and you're finding out about the, not only the local issues, but if you want to do some of their national outings, which are excellent, I'd recommend it highly. For example, they have outings all over the West and all over, even back East. So you can pick an area like Colorado, and then you can find out what are some of the conservation issues going on in the state of Colorado. And then you can take action. And that's a great way to help make a difference.
There are a lot of social justice organizations, too, that I know are getting involved in environmental issues, too, that you can get involved with. And the Sierra Club itself is spending a fair amount of time getting involved in their social justice issues. So, for example, we in Coolidge, Arizona Public Service and the Salt River Project have been trying to get gas plants. They're putting methane gas plants for electrical generation up. And it's fairly racist in a lot of people's views because they're very poor and people of color are living in higher concentrations around the Coolidge area. And so they're getting pollution there and they're getting hit the hardest. And then the people that are benefiting off the electricity the most are those who use the most, which are wealthier people.
Right.
So there's a social injustice thing going on and there are ways to get involved. And that in many different organizations.
And I'll be sure to include links to the Sierra Club in the show notes, as well as information about Southwest Discoveries in case you are in the Tucson area and you want to check out some of those tours and get to know more about like the local ecology and conservation there. But with that, Russell and Mitch, is there anything else specific that you'd like to add or relay to the listeners in terms of conservation activism?
I'll paraphrase a quote from Edward Abbey. He's a really good author about the Southwest.
You talk about him a lot in our presentations.
Yeah, he's a conflicted person, a conflicted, flawed person for sure. But he said, sentiment without action is the ruin of the soul. And so you could put that in more positive phrasing, but sentiment should lead to action. And it'll enrich your soul.
That's a powerful one, yeah. Well, here's another one. The Wilderness Needs No Defense, Only More Defenders, by Edward Abbey.
But there are a lot of other good authors out there that really write up the nature of an area. And so it would be good to get involved in reading some of that and their book groups. I mean, another thing someone could do is to set up a book group. Or to set up hikes in their local area, set up a meetup group.
Yeah, meetup groups.
And then just talk about the conservation aspects and talk about the natural aspects of, you know, like installed Merlin on your cell phone. Merlin is a completely free Cornell University product that has all kinds of bird stuff on it. And you can actually identify birds from by taking pictures with your phone or by recording it, recording their sounds, and it'll give you the birds that it thinks it might, that you might be hearing or seeing, that kind of things. Just get involved in enjoying nature, and people will work to protect it to some degree.
Just get out there. Get off the couch and get out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Gosh, I love Edward Abbey, so I'm glad you guys brought him up. But it makes sense that you would talk about him more actively in the Southwest, since he had like quite a presence down in that region of the country. And conversation is so important. So I'm also glad that you guys bring up that point, that just keeping the conversation going and like peer-to-peer interactions can be really impactful.
Definitely.
Awesome. So thank you guys both for taking the time to be on the show and share a little bit about your journey in conservation. And hopefully the listeners had a few key takeaways as well.
Thank you, Meg. We appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. And if you like what you hear, let me know. Leave a review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can find us on Instagram at outdoor.minimalist.book, on YouTube, or subscribe to our weekly newsletter at theoutdoorminimalist.com. For even more updates, other educational resources, and to help build an outdoor community with the shared goal to create a better outdoor space as we recreate.